Show you what that howl's for. Fandom, Beauty and the Beast. Pairing, Beauty, the Beast. Rating, R. Written by, Jism. Read by, Darling Sweet. Summary and warnings. Our telling of the fairy tale Beauty and the Beast, now with more lesbians, fey legends, and, violence. Please be warned, this is, for all intents and purposes, a horror story. It contains mentions of murder, suicide attempts, suicidal tendencies, sexual and non-sexual power play, whipping, and general madness. Legend reduces just as it induces, just as it hyperbolizes, just as it lies. The cypress flower means death and grows on vines. It curls up around Celine's father's castle like a cage, until she smells it evermore. Until her family has been slain and her fife has revolted. Until long past such a time when she could imagine leaving. When the last petal falls, Celine will be free. But the last petal will never fall. The cypress shall outlast her, even if it's the only one. Legend reduces, induces, hyperbolizes, lies, but it is rarely so cruel as fate. The word beast sits in our mouths and hesitates to betray its history. Latin first, and then Old French. Its first meaning, the literal, is the one we remember still. Its second meaning, the figurative, that we cast off some time ago. Fool, it meant once. Celine thinks that's a fitting title for one who would allow herself to be trapped so. Celine thinks that's a fitting title for one who has tried and tried, but cannot manage to die. Cursed, too, would be equitable. She would not turn her nose to omen, though she'd avoid it, given her druthers. She must accept the truth of murderess. Beast means fool, and, as such, is apt. Of course, she's also a werewolf. When she is 19, she is beautiful. When she is 19, she is the envy of the kingdom. When she is 19, nobles vie for her hand and duel for her gloves. And Celine smiles at them with all the mystery she can muster and puts them off. She will not have a husband, though a day may come when she is forced to be a wife. She will bend to no one's will, for all that she is often driven to a curtsy. When she is 19, she is beautiful. When she is 20, she is a monster. It is nothing so romantic as a witch coming forth from the brambles, nothing so tragic as a mad beast beset on her during a stormy night. Celine reads beyond her years and listens where she shouldn't. She courts the fae, fool, fool, and is answered. She was warned, and needs no warning. 19 and beautiful, she knows little of fear. The fairy who comes to her first is so exquisite it is painful. She walks Celine amongst the stars and whispers in her ear, leaves her wistful and hungry. The fairy who comes to her after is hideous in her beauty, content to let Celine cower in her presence. The third, who comes, is without form, patience, or mercy. Little mortal, she croons. I shall bind you to the moon for which you were named. You shall learn better than to call upon your overlords. You shall live until the last petal falls, and not a day less. The first vine creeps in through her window the next morning, cypress blooming the color of blood. Celine cuts it, and another one grows in its place. The vine follows her through the castle, whispering, whispering. She is considered mad even before the full moon rises, speaking always of growths that no one else can see. In those weeks before the truth is revealed, before her hands go to paws and her teeth stretch long and sharp in her mouth, she falls from the envy of the court to the scourge of it. After the moon, there are few left to make comment. She is driven back from the palace, blood-stained and heavy-hearted. When she returns to her own castle, her family has been lost already, and death flowers climb the walls. When she is 19, she is beautiful. When she is 20, she is a monster. Though she will live for centuries, she will not see 21. For the first century, she is forced to slaughter once a year, sometimes more. Villagers come with torches and pitchforks, and princes come to try their hands. And once there is even an army, vengeance ringing in their ears. When they come early, Celine tries to warn them, and when they come late, Celine tries to run. She can hear the vines laughing as she lays waste to hoard the men, blood raining the color of those be-damned flowers, and though she wishes and pleads and throws herself for it, she never, ever dies. By the second century, they have learned to leave her alone. She is left in peace to starve herself, though, of course, the hunger does not kill her. She is left to tear her castle to ribbons, though, of course, it is always repaired by the time she returns to her body. This is his haunt. But then, to the Fae, all of it might be. Celine's eye teeth were cut on well the first time. The second set, the longer ones, scarred Regret's breast instead. She has not been beautiful in lifetimes. But she finds herself in front of the looking-glass anyway, more days than not. Her hair hangs down her back, and her eyes rove wild in their sockets. Her hands go to fists in her lap. She does not cry, because she has long since lost the ability. She does not plead to any god, because she has learned the danger of their answers. After a century of loneliness, all creatures seem sentient. After two centuries, even the castle objects seem to speak. By the third century, Celine is certain she sees things that are not there, and has long conversations with her candlesticks. She'd be mad, but there is no one about to call her such names. The cypress laughs at her when she asks it. She supposes it would know. "My father is sick," says the girl at the door. She has a cypress flower in her hand and a hood over her face. She is the first human Celine has seen in over 100 years. She is a liar. "I smell no sickness on you," Celine says, taking a step back, "though you yourself are touched in the head to have come here. The stories are true. Run. Save yourself." "Save myself from what?" the girl wants to know, and Celine shuts the door in her face, slides down to the floor against it, grits her teeth, and hopes. She does not move, does not breathe, until she hears the sound of retreating footsteps, the whinny of a skittish horse. "My father is sick," the girl says. The same girl, a month later exactly. It is the third day after the full moon, as it was last time, and Celine suddenly disbelieves the ignorance that was so well feigned the last time. "You lie," Celine says, "and you are mad." "Well," says the girl, "I suppose you would know." Celine shuts the door on her a second time, as much in anger as for her own protection. The footsteps retreat, return, and retreat again. When she hears the horse make the end of the property, Celine opens the door, peeks around. There is a rose growing up out of the roughly hewn stone, fruitless and thriving still, a red so deep it runs to burgundy. It was not there before, and when Celine reaches out to touch it, it crumbles underneath her hand. My father is... What do you want from me? Celine demands, throwing the door wide. Hackle she doesn't have today, going up, up, up. Why do you come here? Why do you torment me so? What must I do to be rid of you? Dead, the girl says, another rose blooming between her cupped palms. My father is dead, and has been some 15 years. He picked a flower from your vines, and it poisoned him. It poisoned my mother. It poisoned my sisters and their husbands and their children. The village claims it poisoned me. If you have come for revenge, you are well met, but doomed. Celine says, grief heavy on her tongue for the first time in centuries. I have killed far better warriors than you, and wanted to far less. Even I cannot take my own life. Heaven knows I have tried. I will tell you again, and for the last time, run. The girl drops her hood, and Celine's breath hitches. She is not beautiful, not as Celine was at 19, not as the Fae once were. She is tousle-haired and ordinary-looking, a long scar down the side of her cheek, fire burning bright in her eyes. She is unafraid and unarmed, and quite mad indeed. I did not come for revenge, she says. And when she smiles, she looks like someone else. My name is Belle, and I have come to thank you. Celine speaks to the castle, but the castle speaks to Belle. It is unnoticeable at first, being as Celine has locked herself on the farthest wing to prevent the inevitable. Certainly, she will kill Belle. There is no question of it. But the pain of slaying is that much less when she does not know her victims. The cypress hisses at her, reminds her of the folly of hiding from her fate. Then Belle's roses creep up under the door while she sleeps. But still, Celine will not come out. Curiosity overwhelms her after a week, and she finds herself wandering the castle's hidden passages, long since memorized. She keeps out of sight and watches. Belle spends hours in the library, but she is not reading. Belle spends hours in the garden, but she does not call anything to grow. Belle wanders the bedrooms, but does not rest, just cocks her head and smiles. She is listening. She is listening, though, to what Celine cannot fathom. She is listening, but there is nothing to hear. Even the candlestick is silent, so far as Celine can tell. She wonders if the castle has at last given up its allegiance to her. She wonders if this fresh madness means her own may at last be drawing to a close. Belle eats nothing except the cypress flowers, one after the other, popping them into her mouth and closing her eyes against the flavor. The full moon comes, and Celine loses herself for 3 days, opens her eyes on the fourth, expecting a macabre display. Belle sits on the library floor, her head tipped back, her face calm. I have tamed you, she says. You have done no such thing, says Celine, and knows even as she says it that she is lying. The villagers, Belle tells Celine, have grown vicious. Not so vicious as me, says Celine, and Belle scowls. You are not vicious, she says. Viciousness inherently implies a desire to kill. You are trapped, and you are deadly, and you are certainly mad. But you have never been vicious. Viciousness is whipping a boy for stealing an apple. Viciousness is selling your daughters off to the highest bidder. You are a creature. You cannot be helped. Is that why you thank me? Celine asks that, sir. for the flower that poisoned your family? No, Belle says, and her eyes glint red in the light of the dying fire. No, Celine. I thank you for waking me up. Months pass. Belle makes her read every book in the library. Celine tells her it is folly, that she has devoured them all time and time again, that she can recite each one with little trouble. Centuries of solitude with nothing but books for company. Celine would be a scholar if not for the madness, if not for her treacherous, murderous blood. Read them again, Belle says, and it is a command. The cypress howls its agreement, and Celine does. They have changed her books. They have grown over into something else, into a history woven rich with power she knows not of. They burn the palms of her hands when she holds them, leaves her eyes streaming tears she thought she'd never again shed. And Belle holds her and strokes the fire, murmurs nonsense against her ear. Why? Celine says once, and Belle smiles. Darling girl, she says, a vine twining around her wrist to wish her good morning. You asked the wrong questions. The moon rises and sets, rises and sets, and Celine rises and sets with it, as she has always done. After 2 months in Belle's company, she remembers her wolf time when she wakes. In all her years, this has never happened. Always she came back to herself, and was greeted with the chaos she had wrought, the stripped bare of her recall. She demands answers that Belle will not give her. Wait, Belle says, and Celine obeys. The moon rises and sets, rises and sets, and Celine rises and sets with it, as she has always done. After 4 months in Belle's company, she wakes from her wolf time hungry. In all her years, this has never happened. Always she came back to herself and wished for nothing but emptiness, was rife with a craving only death could state. She demands answers, and Belle strips, smiles, crooks a finger, crooks it again. Come, Belle says, and Celine obeys. The moon rises and sets, and Celine rises and sets with it, as she has always done. After 6 months in Belle's company, Celine opens her eyes during her wolf time and sees. In all her years, this has never happened. Always the wolf has taken her entire, has risen up and consumed her until the moon set her free. She demands answers, and Belle's eyes spark feral. Wake, Belle says, and Celine knows nothing else. You are Faeborn, Celine guesses, her head pillowed on Belle's chest, and Belle strokes a hand through her hair and laughs. Not quite, my dear, she says. Try again. You are Fae Maid, then, Celine says. You must be. Belle sighs, ruthful, fond. That I cannot deny, for all that is not the full truth of it. You always were a liar, and may I ever be, Belle murmurs soft. The truth, then? You'll settle for nothing less, I imagine. Time has made you so dogged. Spare me your wit, and tell me your secrets, Celine says, bold suddenly in a way she has not been since she was 19, in a way she thought she would never be again. She is a monster, and she will never see 21. And this mad girl who is named for beauty is more a wolf than she will ever be. My overlord selected me when I was very young, Mel says, a howl tangled in it. You courted their trouble, and they left it with you. I was chosen by your cypress flower, to bring fear where fear is long forgot. I'm sorry, says Celine. for she knows better than anyone the truth of the fae, the havoc they are forever wreaking, the mercy they forever fail to show. Belle's eyes are kind, for the first and last time. Do not be, Pat. I am not, and have never been. As I say, you courted their trouble. I, for my sins, was chosen. They do not choose lightly, Selene, and they do not choose poorly, either. I have long been more fae than human, but I am more human than fae. There is no creature that scares quite like we do. Did they name you? Selene says, shifting to look up at her, compelled suddenly to know this answer as she has not been by any of the others. Are you beauty by their definition, or by your own? By yours, I hope. Belle says, light but sighs when Selene does not break her gaze. Ah, I confess. I did hope you'd wait a bit longer to ask the right questions. Yes, the Fae named me. No. That name was not Belle. What was it, then? The word would hurt you, Belle says. And her smile is wicked, wicked now. And we can't have that now, can we? It translates, however. Would you like to know what? Selene wouldn't, suddenly. She has lived nearly 3 centuries, and she knows change when she smells it on the wind. The truth will shift these months into something different, and they are the first good months in time without end. But then again, she trusts her vicious liar, knows a master when she finds one. Yes, Selene says. And Belle's eyes don't just spark red this time. They call me the last petal, she says. Now rest up. We ride in the morning. They ride and they kill. In some lands, Selene is called a hellhound. In some lands, Belle is called the devil. Humanity has warped its legends, has stripped them of fate's, fae's, cruelty, has forgotten their fear. Selene takes to the streets, Belle on her back, and reminds them. Selene wears a collar of roses. Belle wears a crown of cypress vines. Haven't you ever wondered, little one, why they call them fairy tales? The last petal falls outside the gates of the palace, an arrow through her shoulder, a laugh on her lips. There's blood on her teeth, and it is not her own. She whispers, "Darling, darling, how they will sing of us." As the life flees her body, and Selene tips her head to the sky and howls her grief for 2 days, is not shot down until she at last is dragged back to humanity. The men in the castle, those who are left, are too afraid to approach the bodies. The bloodshed had been one thing, but the unending howl had been something else. Where they traveled, fear still lurks in the darkness. Where they rested, Cyprus still winds towards the sky. Where they fell, roses still grow. It is best, all things considered, not to touch them. This story has been read to you by Darling Sweet, and can be found at km-morrison.livejournal.com, and please leave feedback either at KM Morrison or at the Archive of Our Own. Hope you enjoyed. Thanks for listening. Talk.